Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
With Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast.
Hi, my name is Olivia Woldenstein, and I write young adult fiction, romance, especially romance, a little bit of paranormal, and a little bit of contemporary too.
And you're calling in from Switzerland, correct?
Sunny Switzerland, sunny Geneva, yes.
This is one of the amazing things about doing these remote interviews is that you could literally talk to people anywhere. So welcome to New York virtually. I believe that's where you're originally from.
I grew up in the city. When I was very small, I grew up between Paris and New York, and then we settled in New York. And I was very happy about that because although I am French, New York was a great place to grow up, even though it wasn't as great when you're a kid until when you're a teen.
Yeah, it is a little bit different when you're a kid, but I have a lot of friends with young children and they live in the city, and I feel like their reality is just very different than the reality of other kids. You know, like they'll just go on the subway with their parents and they'll just, you know, walk down a block that's crazy. I mean, obviously not now, because a lot of us are still in quarantine. Yes, but you know, city reality is different for kids, so I think kids just adapt. But let's talk about your books. So you write paranormal romance for teens. How did you start writing? When did you start writing?
So I started writing when I was pregnant with my first child, who's turning 11 soon. And it was back in 2008, and the world was going to crap because of the whole recession. And I was actually making jewelry back in the day, and I was thinking, I want a job that has nothing to do with the world economy and that I can do remotely, because, you know, having a child at home it's a big responsibility, and I didn't want to be traveling or even working at an office for too many hours. And I wrote a lot of books. I put them all away. And then finally, I finally started with self-publishing back in 2015. And little by little, I mean, I learned the indie market, and then I got my first traditional publishing with Swoon, and that was very exciting. So that book is coming out very soon, I think.
Very soon. Yeah. Would you like to tell us about it?
I would love to tell you about it. So it's funny because I wrote a book about Nashville without having ever gone to Nashville back in the day when I wrote it. And it was about, it's a lot more than just about like the town or the country music, but it is about a girl who has a big dream and wants to follow that dream. And she's entirely focused on it and can't imagine that, you know, it could, that she would ever stop having that dream. And it was fun to write a character who was so driven. And it was fun also to write about music. I mean, I listen to a lot of music, so.
If you go to your website, you have a whole playlist, which is very good. I might have snuck on your playlist, which I shouldn't say sneaking because you have it out there for people to see. Do you listen to music when you write, and what kind of, does it change depending on the genre?
It does. I actually have a playlist for each book that I've written, and it is true. And that I'll add some songs, I'd say like every week, and just listen to them on a loop all the time. And definitely the one for Not Another Love Song is very country. I mean, it's a lot, It's fun. It's very lively music. And yeah, you can check it out. I think it's on Spotify. I don't know if it's under my name, but it's on my website.
So, it is. It is on your website. Yes. And it's very cool. I always like to. I always like to hear what authors are listening to when they write. So travel is strange, but you haven't been to Nashville at all, like, since?
So I hadn't gone to Nashville, and then I finally got to travel there a year after I sold the book. So last year. And I mean, it was very funny because I had another interview recently and I was answering that question, but it was very funny how familiar it all seemed, even though I'd never been there. So it's quite incredible the level of research that the internet can give you nowadays. I don't even know how it was to write a book back in, I mean, you couldn't write what you didn't know back in the day, I think.
Do you think that that's why people used to say, write what you know?
Maybe.
That just kind of came up in my mind. I'm like, because you and somebody else I recently interviewed, we've talked about the fact that depending on your situation, be it you're quarantined or you have a young family, or, you know, you can't travel necessarily how you would want to when you're writing about a real location fictionally, but there's so many more facets to researching it now and so many more ways to research it now than ever before, so that helps.
I know. I mean, before, if you wanted to write about a murder mystery, I mean, you had to go ahead and commit the crime, right?
Absolutely. I know for sure. You know, that sounds like a book in the making. That's a book in the making, you know, like somebody, a murder mystery writer from way back when.
I'll pitch it to Swoon.
Very meta. Yeah, there should be some romance in that.
I will find a way to sneak it in there.
So with your paranormal stuff, did you read a lot of fantasy and paranormal books before you began writing them?
Oh yeah, I did. I was one of the Twilight fans.
I wasn't going to mention it, but now that you bring it up.
No, you know, it's funny because I always read when I was a child, and then I kind of stopped reading just because life. And then I discovered Twilight, and I read those books in 10 days. Thankfully, I discovered it when all four books were published. And I was just thinking, I really want to do what Stephanie Meyer did. And so I did get into first the paranormal genre, and then I dabbled in the contemporary, but at the root of it, I love the romance. So you could toss me anywhere with romance and I'll be happy.
So that's a good place to go. So romance is big, and there's a lot of opinions on romance, but it endures for so many reasons. So what makes a good hero in a romance novel, especially YA?
So there are a lot of different heroes out there. But I mean, there are a couple like bullet points that the hero always fits. And he's always a protector. I mean, he's usually handsome, but you know, that's
Sometimes he's ruggedly handsome, and same thing for the heroine too, you know. But still, sometimes he's like a diamond in the rough.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes, but sometimes.
With very nice abs, that diamond.
Absolutely. Of course, abs are a must.
From what I've read, he's usually quite charming. Even if he is not always kind, he's always charming. Strangely enough, they actually work together. But I think the big facets are really like being a protector and being there for the heroine all the time. I think if you have a romance and the hero's not there, I don't think you can call then it a romance.
That's not really a romance, is it?
Although it could be interesting.
It could be, for sure. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's also a librarian years ago, and we were talking about Mr. Darcy, who...
Ooh, yes.
Yes, Mr. Darcy, and he's not always kind.
No, the enigmatic and rough Mr. Darcy, yeah. And there's a big trend right now in indie publishing, although it's a little bit fading, but it was last year, and it was the bully romance. And I have to say that I'm not really on, I mean, it wasn't my thing, but there is a huge, huge audience for that. So I guess you can have heroes that are a little bit too strong sometimes, a little bit too protective, but as long as they can redeem themselves in some way at the end, I mean, you could potentially have them liked.
You know, and I think kind of going to the Mr. Darcy part, and when you're talking about just, you know, the romance in general, what my friend had said, and this stuck with me forever, and I'm going to call out to her if you don't mind, because I think she'd appreciate it. Jen Marino, she's a great children's librarian over at the Rockville Center Library a few miles away. What she said to me was that she feels that the appeal of Mr. Darcy is that he changed for Elizabeth.
He did.
You know, he was snobbish and standoffish, and but he did. He was willing to
himself in a way to the reader, but also to Elizabeth. Yeah,
right. So he became, yeah,
the man. She did she make him into that man, though, or did he become that man?
It willingly. I think it was a combination of everything, or at least that's how I kind of always saw it. I mean, he was a protector of his sister because his sister was courted by the gentleman who later married Elizabeth's sister, Lydia. And she was burned so badly. And there was kindness in him, I believe. You know, this sounds like Star Wars. There was goodness in him. But maybe, you know, he had his own prejudice and his own worldview based on how he grew up and how he lived. He was very wealthy, didn't ever want for anything, and brought that into whatever bitterness he had. But I think Elizabeth started knocking those walls down a bit, and the two of them sort of had to come together. And I think that that's what makes that story so iconic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I remember, I mean, I did not like reading books in school because they usually chose very, very, I don't know. I don't want to call Beowulf boring, but it was a little...
Beowulf is not for everybody.
No. And then they gave me Pride and Prejudice to read, and I was like, oh, I like reading. So
yeah,
I think that was my first realization that I liked romance. And so I'm so happy that I get to do that for a living now.
I think it's wonderful. And so you've written about werewolves and angels as well.
And fairies.
Do you have a favorite of the three?
My favorite is actually vampires, and believe it or not, it's the only one I haven't written. And for some reason, I don't write them all in the same worlds. They all are very separated. So one day I'm going to get to my vamps. But no, I mean, I've enjoyed writing all of them. I love the fairies because they're quite wicked and fun and godlike, so they're a lot of fun. Werewolves are, I mean, sexy, and, you know, I mean, it's just such a fun idea to, like, be able to transform into a beast. I mean,
sure.
Angels are the most recent ones, and I loved writing about angels because I'm a big gray person. I mean, I love gray, and I see white, I see black, but it's never that, you know, separate. And so I loved to, like, show that. So.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fun. I know the first of your Angel series was almost like a Romeo and Juliet forbidden romance between an angel who is trying to redeem somebody, but maybe it kind of goes both ways. So
it definitely was. It was you know, that not all angels are angelic and not all sinners are horrible people, but it's I love that world. And actually it was supposed to be a standalone and I loved it so much that I decided to write a second one, which I was doing before the interview, and I'm going to go back to doing after.
Very exciting stuff. So do you read for pleasure yourself, and what do you read when you're not writing?
So I'm a huge reader, and I feel like, I don't know, it's funny, when I started, I don't think I was reading quite as much, and then there was the Kindle, and then Kindle Unlimited, and then there was starting to be a lot of great books on there, and so I started reading. And also, I think it's a good way to understand my market, because it is, the indie market is quite different than the traditional market. But I have to admit that I don't read a lot of paranormal or fantasy. I mean, I'll read some, but I like to read contemporary more. I don't know if it's a choice, like, so that I'm not too influenced when I write my paranormal, or if it's just because, I don't know, I'm at the age where I'm 36, so I don't know. I want something that's more rooted in reality.
I think that makes perfect sense, and I think that you make a good point with influence, because, you know, you can sometimes, and this is not a jibe or jab at all to those who do it, but sometimes you can tell what an author was reading when they began to write a certain book. So that's, you know, it keeps it fresh. Not that you can't have a fresh take on something that's been done, but that's an interesting, that's very interesting. So before we go, talk a little bit about the indie market and just sort of what the differences are and how you found your rise to traditional publishing.
So the big difference for the indie market is that we rely a lot on ebook sales more than paperback or hardcovers or any other. I mean, actually audiobooks are pretty big now too. So it's ebooks and audiobooks. And the people who buy ebooks and audiobooks are not teenagers. So if you're writing young adult indie, you're not actually writing for the teen market. You're writing for 20 to 40 year old women. If you're writing romance, if you're writing another genre, then you're
almost like new adult, I suppose, was the term.
Exactly. It's more mature YA. The characters are, if it's YA, in the indie market, the characters are under 20, but it's definitely more mature than what you have on the trad side of YA. And it is true that new adult is a new category that emerged. I think it was probably with Colleen Hoover. I want to say
I love Colleen Hoover. Oh boy,
yeah. I adore her stuff. Yep,
she's very. Wow.
out there.
My gosh, yes.
And she along with other authors but they kind of brought along this new adult market. And I suppose like my paranormal sort of fits more into the new adult paranormal, I want to say, than young adult, but we still label it young adult. So this is on the indie side, this is what you're doing. You're targeting an older audience with young characters. On the trad side, if you're writing YA, you're really writing it for teenagers. So it's a little bit different. I mean, not that you have to dumb anything down, because teens are way more mature than we give them credit for.
Absolutely. Children are too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to make sure that, you know, the messages that you're sending are appropriate, exactly.
Yes, for sure.
So I think that was the biggest difference between the indie and the trad. I've seen though some crossover recently where I find like the traditional young adult are getting a little bit more mature. I saw it with like Serpent and Dove. And I was not surprised by the, because it's not erotica or anything like that, but I mean, it was quite mature. I mean, Sarah J. Maas also.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's crossover now.
As I think is appropriate, because teens are at different levels and
they're learning things faster and more differently than back in the day. I mean, I have my 11-year-old son who asks me questions that I don't think I've ever asked my parents about when I was growing up. So yeah, they're definitely less sheltered than we were. And why not give them like information? Again, as long as it's not, you know.
And you can put it into context, for sure. How does audiobook publishing work for indie? Do the authors usually record their own books? Are there...
God, no. Nobody would want to hear a whole book with my voice. No, we hire out the jobs. And they have two different ways of hiring someone. Either you do a royalty share if you can't afford to pay someone that. Per finished hour, or you pay them for each hour of audio. And it's a very good asset to have, like to have a good audiobook. And you know, little by little you find people that you'd love to work with, and it's fun. And again, Amazon sort of made all of this very easy through ACX Publishing, which is the Audible branch.
So when you got picked up by Swoon, I love the name Swoon. I'm going to say it more. What did you find different? You know, did you feel like you had to shift gears a lot, or did you feel that the traditional publishing world is starting to sort of adapt to ushering in voices who've published?
This again is like so personal. The story I wrote, they loved the voice of the character and they never, you know, told me to change her voice or, you know, take out scenes that they thought were maybe too much, too racy. Although, I mean, Not Another Love Song is pretty clean romance. But the story changed a lot with them. It was 80%, I rewrote it like probably three times before they okayed it. And I think that was a little tough on me when I'm so used to writing what I like. Although, you know, indies, we do work with a whole team of people. It's not just
beta
us.
Beta readers, correct?
There's beta readers, we have editors, we have proofreaders. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole team of people.
Yeah.
But it's not exactly the same as like when you have someone saying, oh, you really need to cut that out. And so you try to keep it in and then you can take it out. And in the end, you know, they do make your book into a better book. So you have to trust their right. know-how. So it was a very interesting experience.
So Not Another Love Song, we are just so excited to have you and talk to you about this, and we hope to have you back sometime very soon.
I would love to be back. I would love to tell you all about future projects.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have anything else you're working on now, actually? We could...
Well, I'm actually working on the sequel to... I'm doing a lot of spin-offs these days, either sequels or spin-offs, so... And I'm actually co-writing for the first time, and I'm having a ton of fun co-writing, and I never thought I could, so.
Who are you co-writing with, can you say?
Well, I'm co-writing with a friend right now.
Okay.
We're going to disclose the project when it's nearer to completion.
You don't have to say anything else. That's awesome. We're very excited to hear about it.
But it's a fun, I mean, even for children, if they love to write, but they don't have the time or they don't have, it's really fun to do it together with somebody else.
So thank you again so much. This was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page, and our guest was
Olivia Woldenstein.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.